welcome into another edition of the Bama Baseline Podcast. I'm James Fletcher with Luke Ratliff and Trevin Pierre-Noel. We got a lot to cover today. We got two games in the books for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Mississippi State, we took the loss in that one, but we bounced back with a big win over South Carolina this weekend. We'll recap those for you here in the first segment. Second segment's going to be wide open. It's up to you guys. Whatever you guys want to talk about when we reach that time, that's what we're going to talk about. We'd love to get some interaction, too, on Twitter after the show on what you guys think we should talk about next week as we move into that middle segment.
I love that.
We might rank some stuff today. We've ranked golfers who could make long putts. We've ranked
special guest golf
mascots.
Guy.
We've ranked all kinds of things this season. So anything else we can think of to rank, we'll rank it for you guys. And then we'll get you ready for Vanderbilt and Missouri. Real gauntlet to finish the season for Alabama as we wrap up season play here. Of course, playing the Vanderbilt Commodores and Jerry Stackhouse, who's been rocking the turtleneck in recent games. I've seen him wearing it a couple times.
Maybe that's why they choke so much.
It could be. I've seen him rocking it a couple times.
Well, it's
now,
either so. It's either the turtleneck or he wears like one of those church ties, one of those preacher ties, and the winds are not the fat ones. Yeah, and the knot, the winds are not. It's like 5 inches wide at least.
And we have Konzo Mark on the road as we take on Missouri. Are there any coaches outside of those two who should try to wear a turtleneck in the SEC? I'll leave that out there. We'll get to it in the third segment, hopefully. But chew on that as we move through the podcast. Are there any other coaches in the SEC who should wear a turtleneck outside of Jerry Stackhouse and Colin?
So are you asking me, like, which SEC coaches do I think could rock a turtleneck and make it look good?
Yes. Okay. Which ones should? It should go out in public wearing a turtleneck.
I'd rather concern who shouldn't.
I think we can make a rather long list of who shouldn't as well.
Hello, Brucey.
But let's go ahead and get into this. First, we got to talk about the Mississippi State game. We went down to Stark Vegas. Weren't able to get the win, falling 80-73 to the Bulldogs. Reggie Perry had a big game, but Kyra Lewis, despite the loss, had a really good outing. What did you guys see in that game? What could have flipped things for the Tide there down the stretch?
If John Petty doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, John Petty went down with a hyperextended elbow after 9 minutes of action. He scored 8 points in 9 minutes. It looked like Alabama was going to be in a more favorable position in that game than what it actually turned out to be. But other than that, getting really, you know, the Mississippi State team we thought we were getting in January. That crashed the board so well, especially on the offensive end of the floor. We talked about last podcast, Reggie Perry, and among others, Abdullah Du, just how well they rebound on the offensive end of the floor, one of the top 20 teams in the nation in doing that. And they proved it that night. Alabama just, it didn't look like, after John Petty went down, it looked like they just didn't, you know, outside of Kyra Lewis, things just weren't clicking. You know, things just weren't there. Just one of those games at a very bad time for the Crimson Tide.
Well, to me, you know, that play definitely plays a factor. But, you know, my answer is always going to be the free throws. We left too many points at the foul line in this game, only shooting 53%. I feel like, you know, you make a couple of those, you make it a closer game down the stretch. You know, you can capitalize more on your opportunities because you feel like the game is a lot closer. Mm-hmm. So just free throws, mainly Javian, you know, 2 for 5. I mean, you know, he did what he could. Did what he could. I just wish he could have made just a couple more.
I want to speak about this. Javian Davis Fleming, the artist formerly known Javian Davis Fleming, he played great on the defensive end of the floor.
Yes.
Caught and covering, you know, Reggie Perry, Abdullah Du, even Robert Woodard sometimes, just played really well at the defensive end of the floor and just couldn't seem – Alabama all night that game didn't really seem to get the ball down low enough, and understandably so, with the Twin Towers of Mississippi State. But he played well. The stat sheet's not going to show it. He played very well, very efficient in his minutes on the floor.
Yes, and also I just want to point out that we, the only person who had points coming off the bench was Bolden, and that was because of the John Petty injury. He got a lot of time out there with 33 minutes. So just not having that bench production when starters coming off the floor could also be a major factor into why we just couldn't capitalize on the opportunities we had.
Yeah, we did see Herb struggle a little bit on the offensive end. Obviously, playing with one hand, it's going to be difficult to get consistent output from him offensively, but Kyra Lewis stepped up. Shackelford, as we've seen all season, he's one of the best freshmen in the country. There's no doubt about it. And I think that as he moves forward, he's going to be an all-SEC type of player for multiple years to come.
Most definitely.
He can shoot the ball so well. He's learning how to put it on the floor and get to the rim. He finishes well at times. And then to get to the free throw line as much as he does when he's known as a shooter, I think that's something that you can't discount from his game. In this one, I thought it was big. Obviously, Petty goes down. But to not have the production of Herb on offense with John Petty out, I think that's what really just killed the team. And you can't blame Herb for it, obviously, playing with one hand, but the injuries, they just keep piling up. They just keep coming, never relenting. And you looked at this going forward, and Mississippi State was a must-win for Alabama by all accounts for NCAA tournament bids. They come home to face South Carolina, and you're thinking, where is this production going to come from? With Herb Jones playing with a cast on his hand, of course, still no JQ. You've got the other guys who have been out all season, still not there. Who is going to step up? And it was Javian Davis.
Yep.
He came up big in that next game against South Carolina, had a huge game, 20 points in a double-double.
Hit the free throws that I needed him to hit. Boy, balled out. Only missing four.
Alabama won 90-86 in what was a huge win for them. Obviously, they're still well on the outside looking in, but look, March is crazy, as John Rothstein will tell you. It is madness. Anything can happen. The way this season is going, honestly, guys, I'll tell you, my stance all season has been college basketball sucks. College basketball sucks this year. There is no powerhouse team. There is no miracle run. There's nothing.
It's very cut and dry in the sense that you can tell that, like, Kansas or Baylor and Kansas have separated themselves from everyone else.
Except that Baylor has come all the way back to the pack in the last 2 weeks. It's just crazy how any team on any night looks beatable. And I think that it's just been a really bizarre season where last year we had the Zion, RJ Barrett, and Cam Reddish team that nobody thought
could
would lose.
Yeah.
It did lose, and that was some madness that we got to see in March. You had characters as well throughout that tournament. This year, most of the top guys are on teams that aren't going to make the tournament or that are not expected to go deep, or they're just not playing for a college team this year. It's going to be an interesting tournament as we get into it, and an interesting March, because someone's got to step up. Someone's got to make the Cinderella run. Someone's got to make that win streak that gets them all the way to the final. And I don't know if we have a clear picture of who those possible teams are at this point.
Well, I think this is just going to be like kind of a small example of what we're going to be seeing in the future, especially with the NBA. You know, they're definitely considering going back to the model of 18-year-olds can declare for the NBA draft. So you're going to see less and less of the star players in college playing basketball. So it's really going to come down to, all right, who's the best coach? How can you convince not even the best guys to come, but like the second best guys to come to your school? Because the best guys are going to go to the NBA. There's no reason for them not to. So it's about convincing like the second best guys, how can I convince them to come to my school? And when it comes down to March, there really is no front runner, because, you know, at talent wise, most of these teams are equal. And you know, it's just madness. Like you said, it's going to be madness. I'm trying to fill out a bracket, you know, before pre-tournament, and I can't even think conference tournaments, and I can't even think who could possibly be national champion outside of like Kansas and Baylor. And
I'll tell you
know
right now, I'm picking Gonzaga no matter what.
And like,
no matter what, I don't care what the bracket looks
like. And honestly, I can't even sit on Kansas because I know good and well they're going to let me down.
So, I think every team looks like they're going to let you down at this point.
So, but honestly, that's part of the beauty of it, in my opinion. That's why I think this might be one of the best college basketball seasons ever, because you honestly, there's like no continuity in the fact that you have no idea who's going to win, and that's what makes March Madness, because you're literally going to be sitting there like, I just have no clue how this game's going to turn out.
You want to hear a microcosm of the 2019-2020 college basketball season? The Dayton Flyers are number 3 in the AP poll March.
Yes.
The Dayton of the Atlantic 10
Conference. Obi Toppin, one of the few guys who's going to be taken in that top tier of the draft, who's actually going to be playing in the NCAA tournament. And it's going to be interesting to see how everything plays out as we go through the end of the season, as we go into these conference tournaments, because we talk about bid stealers. I think this could be the ultimate year of the bid stealer, as we see these conferences that are just kind of a flat line across the top get in extra teams because someone gets hot and wins that conference tournament.
Well, and two, you want to think, as an Alabama fan, you want to, with your remaining schedule, of course, we'll get to that later in the show, Alabama playing Vanderbilt at home and then Missouri on the road, two very winnable games. And if they do win, it's a very favorable draw in the SEC tournament next week. But if, you know, you look around, if you're an Alabama fan and these conference tournaments are starting, especially these mid-majors like the SoCon and the A-10, and you're looking at the Ivy League too, you look at these conferences and you've got to figure out who you need to pull for to make not just yourself look good, but to prevent bid stealers. Like, at all costs, there cannot be, as an Alabama fan, you do not want to see East Tennessee State lose the SoCon.
No, you do not. Because if Furman and East Tennessee State are in,
that knocks somebody out.
That hurts.
Because East Tennessee State, to begin with, has a tournament resume.
Yeah.
And you don't want them to have to steal a bid or take your bid, right? Or whoever they lose to take your bid.
Right. You got Rhode Island's another team that's on that bubble. Richmond. Mm-hmm. And there's
so many
good teams.
You don't want another thing. You don't want a 3-bid A-10 because you look, Dayton, of course, getting into the NCAA tournament on resume alone, and whoever wins the conference tournament is getting into the NCAA tournament. So you're pulling hard for the Dayton Flyers.
Right.
Right. And this is a very stressful but wildly entertaining time of year as a college basketball fan, and it's why, in my mind, it's the best sport.
These next 4 weeks, you have end of the season, regular season, where standings are about to be changed, and that affects the conference tourney. And conference tourney is really, honestly, in my opinion, where most of the madness happens.
Yeah.
Not even like the NCAA tourney, you have one or two games where you're like, oh my God, or let me say three or four games where you're like, oh, wasn't expecting that. But to me, conference tourney is really where the madness is really made, because you have people who are very familiar with each other playing these games, fighting, like, it's one outs in a lot of these conferences, and, you know, they're balls to the wall, just, we gotta win this.
Yeah, and when I say this season has been a terrible college basketball, when I say it sucked,
there's not a national storyline.
There's a lot of good teams. There's no great team. There is no national storyline. The things that drive the regular season of college basketball have not been there, but that leads to a crazy March, a lot of madness.
This might
and
be the
that's
best
ultimately
March.
What people are looking for outside of the Blue Bloods, which, again, like I said, they're not there in the way that they often are. Absolutely. So they're gonna have to lean on this madness. Let me tell you right now, the worst case scenario for the NCAA is that we get some combination of Blue Bloods in the Final Four. If all the Blue Bloods all of a sudden figure it out and just march through the tournament.
If you have Duke, Kansas, and Kentucky in the Final Four,
that would just kill the NCAA, because they've been hurting all season. Here we go. We need madness to draw back in this money and these stories. And if they dry up, you're really just going to be hurting. But let's get back real quick. We'll just go through this Alabama game, a 90-86 win. We talked about JV and Davis.
First of all, I want to apologize for us going off on the NCAA tournament tangent there. But it's needful. It's needed information if you're an Alabama fan. You know, you need to know just how crazy things are and how things can happen. And if you're the tight, you're kind of hoping for a little madness here, right?
Hoping for some madness, but not within. Those little mid-major conferences where you need only one bid to come out.
I just need those straight out. Just win what you're supposed to. Let's just call it a day.
Yeah, absolutely. And we move on now to Missouri this past Saturday. Or not Missouri.
South Carolina.
Excuse me, South Carolina. This past Saturday, the Crimson Tide had a very spirited game against the Gamecocks.
Your arch rival.
My former arch rival. We'll
talk about that in the second segment.
Yeah, that's good.
We'll wrap things up here just by giving you guys a couple of the stats. Kyra Lewis with 25 points. Shot well from the free throw line. Trevin, I know you appreciate
it. I really
going
did.
Going 8 for 10.
I really did.
You appreciate JV and Davis going 11 for 15, I'm sure.
I'm very happy.
Kyra Lewis also shooting efficiently from deep, 3 for 4 there. We had it might have been the most evenly dispersed scoring that we've gotten.
Kyra came to your defense. He said coach was messing with you, so he came out there and put a sock in his mouth.
With Javian getting some points down low, Kyra and Jaden, of course, from the perimeter. And how about Javian Davis hitting a 3? Incredible stuff.
The range got to start somewhere.
We'll be back. You're listening to the Bama Baseline Podcast.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Welcome back into the Bama Baseline Studios. We're with you on a Monday. We're recording this. Guys, let's talk a little bit more about South Carolina here. Mm-hmm. We need to wrap this up because we sort of got on a tangent in the first segment about the mid-major conference championships and just the big picture stuff, man. We just got
lots to work through.
Yeah. But let's wrap up South Carolina. Let's talk about how Kyra Lewis, just this stretch of the season. You know, I think a lot of in 2018 when Alabama needed something at the end of the year to sort of propel them towards the postseason, mm-hmm. And they got it. It seemed like it was Colin Sexton every game just scoring 25 points.
Yeah.
Just
willing his way.
Willing the team. Pulling it with him. I feel like Kyra Lewis is sort of the same mode right now, where he's going to get his 25 points, and you're going to like it, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So
it's beautiful to watch.
You'd love to see it. Just the way everyone's realizing now, and he's shooting the ball so much better. Kyra went through about a month or so where he wasn't shooting the ball very well.
Yeah.
But just how fast this kid is. And it really showed against South Carolina, getting to the rim. He beat Cousinart from South Carolina nearly every time he drove the rim. Just blowed right by him. And you see just how special he is and what it means to the team, especially when you couple it with an interior presence like Javian Davis when he's playing like he is.
Yeah, you let him go downhill with that much speed at the rim. Not many people are going to get in the way. Not many people are going to stop him. Frank Barton voicing his frustration after the game with his team not stepping up to take any charges, not stepping in front. He was not happy with what he got on the defensive end from his team. But
I like what he said about Herb Jones, though, too.
He did. He gave a lot of credit to Herb Jones, not just as a player, but as a man.
Let's talk about Herb Jones. Holy cow, we didn't talk about Herb Jones. This man, again, I think it's just playing in Coleman Coliseum with one hand.
Yeah.
He really enjoys. And I do. I enjoy it, too. But went, what was it, 4 of 6?
4 of 6 from the free throw line.
From the free throw line.
With his offhand, shooting one-handed.
10 points, right?
10 points. Yes.
10 points.
9 rebounds.
9 rebounds.
And, Luke, we tried this after the game.
We did. This is after the game, James and I, we stuck around. There was a ball out on the court. We went and tried to shoot one hand from the free throw line. It's tough, and I tried with my dominant hand.
Going with the offhand, I hit right off the backboard, straight off the backboard and back. It's not easy to do, and he makes it look so simple.
If nothing else from this season, and you're a fan of Alabama, you need to watch Herbert Jones through this stretch of games. Just how hard he plays. He's playing with one hand. He's playing his best ball of the season.
Yeah.
maybe because he feels like he doesn't have to worry about scoring.
Well, And maybe, how about, could be one.
He's like, maybe he's just like, you know what? I don't really have to score. Really, the only reason I'm out here is to play defense. So we can lock into that zone, say, I'm here to play defense. I'm here to play support. If there's an opportunity for me to score, then it's just there. But I know, like, there's not pressure for me to do that. And maybe just that freeing feeling of knowing, like, hey, I don't necessarily have to score in this game. I can just play defense and just be support, which I know I'm great at. Like, I'm amazing at it, probably the best in the country. Shout out to those people who didn't put him as the best 10 defenders. That's stupid. But, you know, just having him out there, just do, like, it's just more freeing, and he's able to actually just be able to let loose more and can play better.
How about Herb playing 40 minutes?
All 40 minutes.
Nate Oates said that he gave up on the offense-defense strategy, realizing that having Herb Jones in the game is a good thing. So you might as well have him out there as long as you can. Whether he's got one hand or two, he's got to be on the floor for this team to be its best. So playing the full 40, Kyra only playing 37. We've seen him go the full 40 a few times this year, but... Mm-hmm. Now Herb getting the full game treatment.
Got the ice.
Oates said he's got the conditioning to do it. It was just a question of if he could stick around on the offensive end, and he sure did. Getting into the double digits here, almost a double-double.
Yeah, and you see, too, I want to talk about this, the resiliency of this team that I didn't necessarily, you know, I knew they had it, but a lot of people were questioning, you know, this team faced a little adversity. Will they turn over? Or will they play up to the level they need to?
Yeah,
and starting out the under 12 timeout or the under 16 timeout in the first half, when it was 12-1 South Carolina leads after 4 minutes of game time.
Right.
It looked like, you know, one of those games that Alabama was just going to belly up.
Yep.
And roll over, but they didn't. Kyra Lewis with two steals in transition, leading the four straight points to get back into it, sort of light a fire under the team and the crowd as well.
Yeah.
And things just fed from there.
It did. It really picked up from that point. And I did question not whether Alabama would roll over. I don't think a Nate Oates team, we're going to see that.
Because that boot camp looked like it came in handy, didn't it?
Because his mentality and the way he coached, he's not going to be a part of a team that rolls over that way. But I did question, with South Carolina having so much, presumably more to play for, as being more established on the bubble than we were at that point, and really them needing this win as a quadrant one opportunity to get into that tournament picture, I did wonder, does South Carolina just have that much more to play for? And in the first few minutes, it looked like it, but this team, like I said, they weren't going to lay down, and they certainly did nothing like that. They came out, they fought hard. Got the crowd behind them as quickly there, like you said, after those two steals, and they rode that momentum the rest of the way. Really big win for Alabama. I wouldn't say they're on the bubble, but I do think that it makes the SEC tournament more interesting.
Yeah,
presuming that they can take care of business, which of course we'll talk about in the next segment here. But it's going to be an interesting few weeks of basketball here in March.
Can't wait to get up to Nashville.
I can't wait.
Get up to Nashville. It's going to be a fun time.
All right. That'll wrap us up here in the second segment.
Excuse us.
How am I forgetting this?
The relationship that was mended on our
very own. We have to talk about this. We have
our very own Coleman Coliseum.
We have news out of the South Carolina, Alabama. I broke the news, of course, with the quote from Luke later on that night.
Must pray that James Fletcher.
Luke Ratliff has mended some fences with Frank Martin. Luke, why don't you give us the latest on that?
Yeah, if you've listened to this podcast any of the season, you understand my fear of Frank Martin a couple years ago, in summer 2018, when Alabama landed a commitment from Juwan Gary, a Columbia, South Carolina native. There was a bunch of, you know, complaining and moaning online from the South Carolina coaching staff, including Frank Martin about losing Juwan Gary to Alabama, and, you know, we poked fun at him, and it ended up in me getting blocked by Frank Martin on Twitter.
Did you tell him to unblock you?
No. we'll get into that, but I've been scared to death because I've heard rumors that my tweets were hung up in the South Carolina locker room last year, that Frank Martin knows who I am. And I have been scared all season. I've been voicing my fears on this podcast all season long for the Frank Martin return to the Coleman Coliseum game. And I got to tell you, I talked to him after the game. He is such a nice guy. And I knew he was. He's mm-hmm. such a nice guy. And we talked, and he commended – we talked for a while, and he commended me on – took a picture. It's online for you. So he commended me on all the stuff that our student section has accomplished over the past couple of years and how great it is to have support like this in the SEC and how classy we were. And,
yeah.
And
that's
what
a,
I gained –
that's a new one.
What I gained from this is that he has no clue who I am. So that's good. Or he's forgot about it completely, but – so that's good, and it's real nice to repair relations with someone as vaunted as Frank Martin.
You don't have to live in fear now anytime
that's
you go
right.
outside. You don't have to worry about hit being sent.
I was worried, like James said, that you know he
Kenny
was going
Martin.
To bring Kenny Martin,
Chris Silva, the whole crew,
Cendarius Thornwell from Live PD was going to show up with him. I was real worried about it, though. But no, he's a really nice guy. And it was good to talk to him and mend that relationship.
All right. Well,
good job, Luke.
A happy
good
story
job,
to end our second segment. When we come back,
proud of you.
We'll have a preview of the Vanderbilt game and, of course, that Missouri game that'll wrap up the regular season. You're listening to the Bama Baseline Podcast.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Welcome back in once again to the Bama Baseline Podcast, our final segment of the day. And we're going to get you ready for the Vanderbilt Commodores once again. We got you ready for the trip up to Nashville. Now they're coming down here to Coleman Coliseum. What do you guys expect? We've talked about this team before. They're a little bit different of a team since we last spoke. They've gotten a win.
Want to win
in the conference? They're 9-20 now, and I got some Nate Oates news from his press conference earlier today. Before we get into our thoughts on the game, Nate Oates earlier today used a Bible reference.
Well, he is in Alabama.
In a Bible verse, in talking about the Alabama players, he said, "Pride cometh before destruction, and a high spirit before the fall."
Ooh.
He said it was applicable 3,000 years ago. It's still applicable today. He does not want this team overlooking the Vanderbilt Commodores. That's for sure.
Absolutely, because you've seen earlier in the year, and this has been echoed statement throughout conference play, especially after wins against Auburn at home and LSU, you see Coach Oates say, well, you can't let the next game be a letdown game. Mm-hmm. You know, especially after LSU, Alabama played Texas A&M team that's surging, but could definitely be a lot better. And Alabama sort of rolled over and just let Texas A&M do what they needed to do to win that game. And it was a letdown after a big win against a ranked LSU team, second in the conference LSU team. And, you know, looks like Coach Oates is doing what he can, pulling out all the stops. Even he's gone to the holy book to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, he is not going to let that happen again, no matter what he has to do.
Because if there's one thing we know about Alabama basketball, is that, you know,
historically,
we win the games that we're not supposed to win, and we somehow find a way to lose the games that we're not supposed to lose.
Historically speaking.
I really hope that, especially in Coleman Coliseum, I don't know what it is about late February, early March. This is usually bad news for us. I'm praying on this one. I'm not even going to lie. I'm with NATO. I'm praying on this one. There's no reason we should lose. I don't want to be Vandy's one of the two wins they got this year.
Well,
I don't want to be that. please don't let their wins be against one of their wins be against
Well, I think you said it there, although Vanderbilt has picked up a win against a good opponent, against LSU team.
Yeah.
I don't want
this conference season. And they're not a good team. They're still not a good team. It's a game Alabama should win handedly. Should win more, in my opinion, than the 15-point win in Memorial Coliseum, Memorial Gym, this past January. Mm-hmm. But I don't think this will be a letdown game at all. But it's not. It's against Vanderbilt Tuesday night at home. It's not a game that you can't understress enough how important it is to win. Right.
Look, we could talk about Saban Lee.
Let's make it a hundo.
We could talk about Dylan Dessue.
Trash.
But I'll leave you with one thing before we move on to Missouri, and that's that the Vanderbilt Commodores' only chance, I said it once before this season, I'll say it again, is if Scottie Pippen Jr. becomes his father on the basketball court and wins this game.
I mean,
do you think Jerry Stackhouse is just waiting for that?
I think he is. He's got the turtleneck on.
Scottie Pippen Jr. just
and we didn't,
come on,
we didn't
bro,
get to
come
that.
On.
Let's go ahead and hit on that now.
Turtlenecks.
Is there another coach in the SEC outside of Konzo Martin and Jerry Stackhouse who should wear a turtleneck? Can you guys think of one?
Frank Martin rocks it pretty well. Like I think he's just got that. He looks like a mobster. He's got that look for it, especially when he wears like a pinstripe suit. Uh-huh. He's got the black turtleneck up under it.
Yeah.
I think that's about it though. I don't want to see. Do we think Nate Oates could pull off a turtleneck?
I think he could easily pull it off.
I think he could pull it off in the right setting. I struggle here with some of these. I think it depends on the turtleneck.
Can we all agree that Eric Musselman couldn't wear a turtleneck?
I got a win here.
All right. Who could pull this off? And it's very simple. Buzz Williams.
Buzz Williams
would pull that off.
He was
off
on my list of
easily,
maybes in the
easily,
right situation.
Easily.
The other one was going to be Barnes.
He's got the muscle ton. Ooh, okay.
I think Rick Barnes in the right situation, the right turtleneck, I think he could wear.
That's an interesting pick. That's an interesting pick.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
But Trevin, you had a list of people you for sure don't want to see in a turtleneck. who makes up that list?
Well, actually, Frank Martin actually did appear on my list. I'm not even gonna lie, he was on my list. Another one, obviously, the man down south, a little too round, Bruce Pearl, a little too basketball shaped, pulling off a turtleneck. If you ask me, it's just not up to my flavor liking. Another person, just because, you know, I just don't think he could pull it off. I just don't think it's his range. John Calipari.
That's definitely not his style.
And just don't think.
Here's one that it's definitely not his style.
Go ahead.
Mike White at Florida. He's always got the starch white shirt.
Yeah. Just,
I could not imagine him. Even on a casual day lounging around the house, I imagine him in a starch white button-up shirt.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I picture him in his daily routine.
Who else you got? If you don't have him, I'm going to add it to it.
Give me one.
Tom Crean. I can't imagine Tom Crean in a tie.
I
can't imagine him in a tie. I mean, I know he wears them sometimes, but he always wears the starch dress shirt.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first two buttons unbuttoned, of course.
Yeah.
I can't imagine him in anything other than that.
I really can't either. I mean, I did back when he was at Indiana. I wondered, what if he wore those Hoosier striped pants? I thought that would be a funny sight to see, but I cannot picture him in a turtleneck. No. You're right. Interesting little tangent there, but now let's move on to this Missouri game.
Yes.
Coming up, final game of the regular season for Alabama before we head to the SEC tournament. March 7th, we're going to be playing at 1:30 Central. What do you guys see in this game?
Well, if someone...
Terror.
Trevin sees terror. Luke, what do you see?
I say this as a man who's driving to Columbia, Missouri to watch this game.
That's so sad.
I see a lot of terror. I don't want to say it's a track game, but... Missouri's playing a lot better than they were when they played against us after we beat Auburn on January 15th in Coleman Coliseum. Although they hit 31 consecutive free throws in that game, they weren't playing all too well to what Konzo Martin wanted them to. And they're doing that a lot better now, especially at home. They play really well at home.
You know, there's the thing that I was watching the other day. It's called The Interview. On Hulu. It's a movie with Seth Rogen and James Franco. Mm-hmm. And there's this one scene here where Seth Rogen is outside in North Korea. Yes, it's about them interviewing Kim Jong-un. And he sees a tiger. And James Franklin's like, you know, you need to fight the tiger. You know, just a little comedy back and forth. He's like, I'm not going to fight the tiger. You know, I'm not worried about the tiger. And Seth Rogen just automatically says, I'm just going to run. And the FBI lady, who's also involved for some reason, if you haven't seen the movie, please watch it. It's a hilarious flick. FBI lady screaming, don't run away from the tiger. And Seth Rogen runs away from the tiger, and a missile hits the tiger in the back of the head. That is how I feel. No tigers were harmed in the making of this movie. Just want to point that out.
Thank you,
Trevor. Sure
movie
that
reviews with Trevin.
Trust me, that'll be a fun podcast. No. But, you know, that's how I think this is going to go. Is that we're going to look at the tiger, which is Mizzou. Yeah. And we're going to be like...
I wonder how he came up with that
it's a tiger.
Analogy.
That metaphor.
Yeah. This is going to be like, oh my crap, it's a tiger. We're going to be like, guys, don't run away from the tiger. Stand up to the tiger. Just don't worry about the tiger. And we're just going to be like, freak. I want to run away from the tiger. And the tiger's going to chase us. And then, you know, at the last second, something is going to happen. And we're just going to, the day will be saved. The tiger will be dead. We'll still be alive. That's how I view the Mizzou game's going to go. You're welcome.
Thank you, Trevor.
That is the most colorful rundown you've gotten of a game all season, folks. And I really don't have any better rundown for it. But I would like to point out that Missouri will play three Smiths once again in their game against us. We have to beat all three of them to get the job done.
Great analysis.
I mean, I figure if he's going to go so in-depth, there's nothing else to come.
The past 3 minutes on this show, it should have been great.
They really have been. That's all we have for you guys today, unless you guys got more stuff. Trevin, you got another movie with you?
All I want to say is that Alabama better win against Vanderbilt tomorrow night, Tuesday night, because this Vanderbilt team, although they've won a game this year in the SEC play, I mean, I think they might be worse than Auburn when Verez Ward was point shaving.
Verez Ward, we've had many discussions about Verez Ward.
Who says that Vandy's not point shaving? They're smart enough to get away with it.
But we don't want to throw those accusations out on the podcast. But we're still recording, Trevor.
I'm just joking.
We're going to stop now. This is the Bama Baseline Podcast. I'm James Fletcher.
I'm Trevor Fiorello.
I'm Luke Ratliff. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again next week.